Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sequester Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and with me today, as always, is Brent. How you doing, Brent?
I'm doing great, Taryn. Happy to be here. Happy to talk about another episode of Sequester.
Yes, very excited. Also very excited to be welcoming our first guest of the podcast, and that is Rob Sesternina. How you doing, Rob?
Oh, Taryn, I'm so excited to be back podcasting with Brent and Taryn. Hey, Brent. Is that a hot dog in your pocket, or are you happy to see me?
I'm always happy to see you, Rob. But yeah, I figured you would enjoy that. And I honestly, I asked Audrey because I felt like Thanos and Lex Luthor, otherwise known as Matt and Drew, the guy who won the battle match, if you don't know who I'm talking about, Rob, I felt as though they were not long for this world. And I felt like you would have a good time with them in the game. So I needed to get you on as soon as possible.
Yes. All right. Well, I liked all of the times people were yelling at one another, and that was very simple for me to follow. But as a little bit of a Sequester newbie and casual, I am looking forward to learning on this podcast as much as I'm looking forward to contributing.
Sounds great.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think I understand the sentiment as well. I think that it's definitely a lot of chaos happening in these first two episodes. A lot of players, doing their own thing. I mean, this is, I think, one of the reasons why shows like Big Brother like to avoid casting a lot of players who are all going to be gaming because they are not confident about their ability to showcase exactly what's going on. If everyone is playing, they love to have people like their sisses and so on to just kind of be sitting there and not make them do a lot of work.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Well, Rob, I'm with Taryn on this in that having so many gamers in gaming so much of the time within such a compressed time span does lead to a lot of it's a cacophonous first couple episodes.
Yeah, you know, I made the mistake of I just jumped right into Sequester season 3. I didn't watch Sequester season 2 and I didn't spend a lot of time. I said, I'll pick it up. But I've been a little slow on the uptake in terms of understanding the rules of what everybody is doing here on Sequester.
Well, let's talk about that. So what was your biggest question watching the, because I know you watched the first episode and I know you watched this episode. What was the biggest question that you had that you felt like I need more of X to understand really what's happening?
Well, I didn't really understand what the game was. I'm still a little unsure about what the game is. I know that people get to the house and they make a lot of alliances. And I saw a lot of people throughout the first night or first episode just, you know, let's work with this person. Okay, we're this group. I like this person. At the very end, we're just like, okay, here's the challenges. Just we're going to vote for somebody. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I got that. And then again, at the end of this episode, we're voting for somebody. But it's just in terms of like, I don't necessarily understand like the overall strategy of what is the goal here? Other than we're just going to vote every round.
Yeah, and well, the part of that, I think that you saw probably the biggest example of what was happening here was in that conversation with Brayden and Ty, and I think Jessica was out in the garage as well, where they were floating the idea about voting for Thomas, and Ty was like, yeah, but I like Thomas. He's good. We're tight together. And Brayden points out, well, but he won't put you into a battle match. And so I feel like that is part of the issue here. And I know that that's part of the issue for episode 1 was trying to get people voted out. But the kicker is that you can't let them know that you're behind their demise. Otherwise, they will likely select you for the battle match. That seems to be where the rubber meets the road.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm picking it up and I've enjoyed watching it. I'm just a little slow in terms of the game.
Yeah, I think that like a sort of general overview of how the whole season works at the very start might have been helpful for somebody that's new to the game. I remember when I watched season two, I was like, so they change it up here. And this is how the final four works. And right. I didn't know any of that going in. And I was just kind of along for the ride. I wasn't really I didn't really have a good overview of what it was going to be and what to expect. So maybe that is something that that would have been useful.
I have a question, Rob. So just as a point of order, did you watch the tweet that I have pinned to the top of my Twitter, which it's like a 2-minute video that says, what is sequester?
I've not seen that.
I feel like if you watch that, that would really help you. So basically what's happening is there's, you know, every cycle of the game, two people leave, one through a vote and then one through a battle match. And then the cycle resets and a new twist is introduced into the game. And that pattern repeats until they get to the jury.
Right. In the first episode, it was confusing because that we didn't get to see even the battle match happen in the first episode. So I was I was still unsure up until we got to the second episode of what was happening to the people that faced off.
That's very fair. For those of you who don't know, every cycle of the game takes place probably within a 4 to 6 hour period. So they go through a couple cycles a day. You know, these people are only there for 5 to 6 days. So like these two episodes all happen within the same day. Like literally, Kimberly was voted out, picked two people for a battle match. They battle matched, and then Matt was voted out, and now he's picked a couple people for the battle match. Mm-hmm. So it moves at a fast pace, and I feel like that adds to, like, if you're not unsure exactly what's happening, that probably doesn't help you at all. But I have to say, though, as somebody who did watch season two and now is watching season three, I feel like as a piece of work and the production value of this show, Rob, it is pretty spectacular for what they have to work with, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they have to work with, but
zero.
It's very well done. I would love to, you know, get more into, like, I'd love to hear more about the logistics of what goes on at the Sequester Ranch when they do one of these. I feel like that's not really explored too much of, like, what the daily routine is. But I think we got a little peek behind the curtain when I noticed a shot in the kitchen of just a tray of hot dogs, which ended up coming into play later on when Matt was carrying one around. I don't know if that's how
you
fed on Sequester. They just put a tray of hot dogs in the middle of the room.
That's probably a really good idea. I think I would go for that, Taryn. I don't know about you. Well, you don't like a lot of raw meat like that, do you?
I think they were cooked. I suspect they were cooked hot dogs. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, generally hot dogs, you know, they come cooked. I noticed like a pizza box like on a bed, I think, in the previous episode. So
I was there for that,
a lot
by
of
the
coffee.
Way.
Yeah,
I was there for the pizza boxes. I partook of some of that.
Yeah, but going back to like how easy it is to understand, I also think that I watched Sequester season two in a binge, and I think that during the first few episodes I was a little bit lost, but because I could keep pushing forward, it didn't really matter. Whereas now, as we are watching week to week, it is a different experience where when I'm trying to ruminate on what I just saw, there's a lot more that I don't know yet. And so I think that as we move forward into future episodes, things will become a bit easier to understand and more clear in terms of what the storyline is and who the groups are and who are the people to watch and all of that sort of thing. So
yeah, that's a fair point, Taryn. I did the same thing. I binged season two. I started watching. I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And so I literally just completed the story from start to finish and knew exactly how things happened, why they happened, and who was working with who. We don't yet have those answers, I would say, with a large percentage of this cast.
Yes. And so the first thing that we see in this episode is the battle match that was selected in the previous episode. And that is MP versus Drew. And they were selected by Kimberly. And we talked in the previous podcast about why did this happen? What is the reason? Kimberly in the chat was telling us, oh, just wait, there's an explanation. And so we watched this episode and I think the explanation was, I mean, you do yoga?
I mean, Rob, are you with me on this one at least?
On what? What are you going to say?
Why the hell did Kimberly, after talking about a guy's alliance, pick Mary Payton for the battle match.
I don't know. I don't understand. I was confused. One of the other things that confused me last week, she's like, just, there's a guys alliance, and then gonna send Mary Payton. Yes. That's an interesting name, Mary Payton.
Mary Payton Johnson, yes.
Yeah, and also then sent her in. I thought, oh, maybe she must have a showmance with one of the guys.
If only something like that was there. Taryn, I've seen it. I've seen her interview on My Weekly Meltdown. Kimberly, I'm talking about. I saw what she said in this episode. I stand by what I said last week. This made no sense whatsoever, and I feel like she just picked her because she's jealous, so whatever.
Yeah, well, I definitely did not feel as though I got an explanation for this at all.
Sauce, Kimberly.
Yes, I did throw out a theory as to why I think she might have done it. Other people seemed in the game at the time to think along the same lines, but when confronted with it, Kimberly was not copping to that, it seemed, and it was very awkward, the argument back and forth between Mary Payton and Kimberly as MP.
She didn't have an explanation, right? That was the thing, Rob. Kimberly did not have an explanation. This is another peek behind the curtain that we don't get on shows like Survivor or Big Brother. This would be like literally the pre-jury of last season, and getting to have a camera follow them around and about how angsty they are. Of course, I guess we did get it last season, right? Camp comeback, whatever.
Yeah,
but
we see this a little bit in the Survivor Ponderosa videos where somebody comes back and it's like, "What, you idiot? Why did you vote? Why did you vote me out? I was working with you." Like, well, you do yoga.
Yeah.
Look at my earrings. Do you see my earrings? Do you think I do anything?
I love it when she took off her earrings.
Yeah.
When she took off her hoop earrings and she's standing there in the babe shirt and she's like, I'm not athletic. I don't have anything on. Well, I mean, I have things going on up here, but not things down here.
Yeah, things happen so quickly. You really do. You break down to raw emotion real quick in this game that she is just like, she was just, you know, taken out back and shot, and she's, wait, what?
Why was Kimberly crying? I guess she was just eliminated, but like, I mean, in a viewer time, it's been a week, but then I saw Kimberly still crying about something, and I'm like, why are you crying? It should be Mary Payton who's crying. She just lost the battle match. But whatever. I didn't buy the tears. I didn't buy anything about it. I'm still with Mary Payton. She was robbed.
Yes. And what's interesting is that there is going to be a battle back at around halfway through the season of the pre-jurors. And in season two, that battle back was a circle game style elimination thing where essentially the relationships that you had with the other pre-jurors did matter a lot. And so this kind of argument and subsequent fallout actually can come back to haunt you or help you when it comes to the actual battle back competition. So that's another thing to watch out for.
That's another thing I like about this show, Rob, is that they announce, you know, unlike a lot of reality shows, they announce things ahead of time. So the contestants know what they're getting into. They know they're flying down here on their own dime. So they come down here, they want to play a game, try to get to the end, try to win $2,500. But along the way, they know that if they get voted out or lose a battle match in the first 10 people, because remember, like I said, two people leave every cycle, then they're going to have one chance to get back into the game. And that person plus the 10 people who are remaining in the game make up the jury and the final two. So that's what they're looking to get to here.
Brent, do they say how many people apply to Beyond Sequester? Like what is the casting process like?
My understanding after talking to Audrey was that over 2,500 people applied for season three. And I have to believe that number is going to exponentially increase after this season, because I'm loving what this season's giving to me. And I'm starting to understand some of the relationships that the people have and sort of what's driving the ball here in terms of what people are afraid of and what their agendas are. Yeah. Me personally, I don't know if you've been able to, but remember, I got a chance to talk to these people and I've been like watching some of the interactions, like behind the scenes, like even, you know, on social media and whatnot. I feel like I have a good understanding of what basically happened in these first two episodes. And I'm just sort of wondering if you're with me on that.
With you on which part?
In terms of what it looks like to me, Taryn, I don't know if you agree with me on this. It looks like to me that Tori, who we saw a lot of confessionals of this week, had a big hand in what happened this week in terms of remember, she was the person who was in the tie last week with Kimberly, and she could have conceivably went home. She didn't, but so she knew that some people voted for her, and I feel like, and obviously Matt was one of the people that did vote for Tori, and so I feel like a lot of the driving force here in terms of getting Matt out was an agenda on Tori's part for vengeance, to get rid of the people that wanted to get rid of her. Are you with me on that or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was as they described. I think it was kismet that a men's alliance was brought up. Yep. And then in a show like this, especially early on, as fast paced as it is, it's all about momentum, which is why it often favors the bold. And so with a guys alliance out there, that's the thing that everybody is talking about, because Kimberly just said it.
Yeah.
They are now thinking about it, talking about it, and all of those guys happen to be vulnerable. And so it was a very easy thing to just, let's just keep focusing on this because I'm not a part of it. And Matt, I think, was the sort of figurehead of that alliance, which seemed to be the truth. And so I think it kind of just landed there.
I thought Tori was very good.
Yeah, I
think she's a very, very strong player, seems like. You know, she, you know, it seems like she was having all these conversations with people. She seemed like that she got her way. Nobody seemed like they were getting angry with her. And it seemed like that the guys are ready to kill each other at the end of this episode.
Yeah, it's what it seemed like to me as well. Tori was my second pick to win. Obviously, I picked Kimberly to win, and she was eliminated in the first episode. Tori, but I really like Tori. She was the last person I interviewed, so I'd seen everybody before I talked to Tori. And I somewhat can understand what Thomas called Tori here, Taryn, because he had a conversation with Tori, and he spilled his guts to her, basically. And he said that he really didn't want to... for it to be Tori, the person that he was spilling his guts to, but she was there and he needed to be vulnerable. So I guess this is the person I'm talking to. He evaluated her as not being very authentic. And I had an experience with her where I felt like she was very authentic and very warm. But I guess I can understand it, because I remember when we were talking about the interviews, you said that at first you thought that she seemed a little inauthentic, but then as it wore on, you warmed up to her.
It's interesting.
She had acting face.
Yeah. It's interesting because she's the person who came in saying, I just want to be genuine and authentic and not lie. And that will work. And she seems to be the person that people are most intimidated by, most seemingly disingenuous, not genuine. People find it a little strange. And I thought the reasoning here was actually kind of spot on, in the sense that I don't think she is being genuine with Thomas or with Matt or with Drew when she's talking to them. She's like, I thought she was being just very blatantly sarcastic and like I'm not even going to pretend that I'm, you know, having a good conversation with you. But then in the confessional, she's like, well, I'm pretending that I'm actually on board with this. Meanwhile, she's talking to, I don't know, maybe it was Jordan at the time, or no, I think it was Drew. And she was just like, well, I guess it's fine then. I guess that's it. It's like, I don't think you're fooling anyone there, if that's the intention.
She's very good in confessionals, Rob, but I feel like her acting in person probably needs a little bit more work.
Well, Taryn, when you say that she came into the season saying that she has to be authentic, do you feel like this is the kind of thing that you talk about a lot in the Big Brother season? When you have to declare something, it usually means it's not the case. And because she is acting, I'm going to act authentic, it's coming across as being false.
Yeah, probably so. I think that she's probably too concerned about being authentic, and that concern may turn her inauthentic, which is definitely interesting to watch here. And I think that she's very, very fun to watch so far. Yeah. So I'm definitely enjoying it. Speaking of Drew, we should talk about the actual battle match between him and Mary Payton, as they had to walk across balance beams and transfer balls into various cups. Brent, do you want to explain this game? Because Rob's shaking his head, and I was a little lost.
Yeah,
well.
Brent, what was that? Why did they stop moving? I don't understand. Yeah, it's like, I thought I understand. So what was going on? And then they got into like a staring contest.
I don't know.
And then Drew is like trying to knock Mary Payton off. Like, that was like, what, I don't know what he was doing.
I don't know what he was doing. Okay, so here's the thing. I feel like that this was probably not anticipated on Audrey's part that they would stop in the middle of it there. I feel like that what happened was that both of them probably thought that they had won and didn't want to change, or they were like, I don't know if they had a clock there. I'm guessing not, that they didn't know that they had, like, you know, 10 seconds left, because as you saw, she was winning. She had the lower point total up until about 5 seconds to go. And then they moved, and then some balls were moved back and forth. I feel like it was a little hard to follow. It was similar to the balloon heist, which I know you didn't watch, Rob, but last season, Taryn, the balloon heist challenge between CJ and Cindy, where they were moving things back for about an hour or an hour and a half, a minute and a half. And obviously in that instance, the more athletic person was going to win, and she did. Here, it was a little bit more... Oh, my microphone went down. Hello, gender neutral. And I feel like that both of them probably had a shot at this. By the way, he was allowed to push her, which that was in the rules. And if you fell off the plank, that's why it was called walk the plank, then you would get a point added to your final total.
Why not always push her then?
Total wins. Well, I don't understand why he stopped. Like, because she was like holding on to the pole, but he didn't think that he could, or maybe there was a rule that I missed in there. I know that they're in the chat right now.
Well, he pushed her once, didn't he? Like right away.
Yeah. Why? I want to know, Audrey, why didn't he keep pushing her? Did he think it was a bad look? Did she call him out for it? And he was like, oh, I better not do that anymore.
I thought we saw the whole thing.
I know, but I didn't feel like she really said anything. She just said, oh, if it's going to be like that. So I don't know if he just decided to change his mind. I don't know why he didn't push her more is what I want to know.
But I don't know why they both stopped trying, even if they thought they won. It's just like, is it like a deer in the headlights? Or if I just stare them down, why, what advantage is it to stop?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that it works better as the balloon heist, and maybe this one didn't work as well. But I appreciated the fact that it was more gender neutral and that either one of them could have won. So there we go.
Audrey says, yes, there was a timer, and she says, I think it was his conscience, so he stopped.
Okay, so he stopped because he had a conscience. Bad boy! Do not have a conscience!
Hey, he had the ball, the ping pong ball count.
So were you not allowed to like reach into a thing if they had their hand on it? Was that?
That must have been there because he couldn't do anything when she was specifically holding on to it. So I don't know what happened there, but yeah. I'm guessing that was a rule. Maybe we just didn't know about.
And then, so she was like blocking it. They were in a standoff. She was winning. And then at the last second, she moved away. She didn't even make a move to like grab balls. It seemed like she just moved away. And then he let him get a handful. And then that's how he won.
Yeah. Mary Payton, I'm not with you on that. I don't know what happened there. Like it looked like she was winning and she was winning. And then she made a move, but then she didn't do anything. Taryn, like I didn't see her do anything with the balls, like do something with the balls. Balls, if you're gonna move, I guess. Mary Payton, we barely knew ye. You were robbed. Hopefully you come back in the battle back, but moving on, Taryn.
Yes. So ultimately Drew is the one to come back. Then they have a new challenge. This is the challenge for the round here.
Yes.
That
nine, for the cycle.
Yes, the cycle that 9 of the 18 players are going to be immune from the vote, but that does not make them immune from the battle match. How they're going to determine this is they're all going to run Amazing Race style at some boxes and then bring as many as they can back. And then if the box contains an LOS, then they are immune from the vote this round. Did you like this, Rob?
You know, I felt like it wasn't my favorite in terms of a challenge. I just felt like that, like the opening the boxes like all all in a row wasn't super exciting. Well, but
I was happy that they showed us what happened to each player when they came back and they did their boxes one by one, and it went by fairly quickly.
Yeah,
my bigger thing was I felt like they should have had the green jerseys inside the boxes, mainly because by introducing like an LOS is an idol. I mean, it's a locus of safety. It's an idol. You can play it before the votes, just like Jordan did. It's an idol. So having the LOS is hidden in the boxes, I felt like maybe confused newer viewers because you see all of these LOSs but you know that people found an LOS in the first episode. So I felt like maybe that was a choice on their part to have the LOSs light up when they come out of the box. But in doing so, I felt like maybe you confused the audience a little bit, because you see them with the LOSs coming out of the boxes, Taryn, but then you know that Jordan found an LOS in the first episode, and then obviously Zach's going to find an LOS later on in this episode. So I probably would have put the green jerseys in the boxes and not LOSs.
Yeah. Also, yeah. It seems like the boxes were like opening and like everything was falling out as they were running.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was only because of Kevin's crazy ass, which Thomas had a big problem with when he dove into the boxes and decided to have like 5,000 boxes.
You have to expect that they're going to dive into the boxes. I mean, I don't even know why they were complaining about it.
Yeah. That was Hunter and his big line in this episode where he said it looked like a bunch of jocks running for the last box of condoms, Taryn.
Yeah. I thought that was a odd analogy.
I enjoyed
this is
it.
In the store, Brent. This is
apparently yes. If there was one, look, if you already have five kids and you're with your buddies, and there's one box of condoms left, you probably run for it, Rob. I'm guessing.
I don't know. I think we learned recently from Big Brother that jocks are not fans of condoms. They'd be running away from
Big Brother. Don't need them.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I've never been in that experience. I've never been in a condom race with anybody.
Okay.
Not yet.
Well, hopefully you won't be. Yes. Okay. I have not been either.
But, you know, that's why, you have to be prepared.
I'm prepared. Yeah. Yes. I was always prepared as a kid. Anyway, moving on. So we get to see who gets, obviously, this part
attention
of this.
Attention shoppers, we're down to one box of Trojans.
What?
What?
Like Jingle All the Way.
That's it. I gotta show off my athleticism here.
All I can think of is that Golden Girls episode where, like, Dorothy. I know I'm so dating myself with
really, really jock centric.
You know what? Yeah. Condoms, Rose. Condoms.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if you had if there were like a bunch of guys, I mean, it's like I guess you could make some sort of an alliance of like, all right, let's. Well, I'll buy the box. I'll let me hand one out to everybody and let's just get out of here. Okay.
No, Bill Hall in the chat said it's supermarket sweet, but with condoms. I think that show's coming back, Bill. I think.
Oh,
it's a great show,
but not with condoms though. I'm guessing not. So we, like I said, I do enjoy this part of the twist though, where nine people are safe and nine people are not. It instantly helps me as an audience member. Divvy it down to, okay, these people are vulnerable. These are the people who are in trouble and I need to keep my eye on them. And we saw that those people who got an LOS were safe from the vote, at least. And those people who did not get an LOS were not safe, except for one person who got two LOSs in their boxes. And that was Christine. And she had to assign it publicly. Taryn, did you enjoy that?
I was hoping that this would happen much more often. I was hoping they were going to be a lot more divvying out of the LOSs. But I think that because Christine was the only one, it felt like she didn't get too much blowback from this. She did a lot of damage control afterward. I think people understand that they've only known these people one day so far. And what am I going to do?
Yeah, exactly. I felt like she did a good job too, Rob, in terms of going to all the people with the red jerseys, knowing that, hey, I'm safe from the vote, but I'm not safe from the battle match tier. I feel like that's the interesting thing about Sequester is that, unlike other reality shows, you might know, hey, like, I'm safe from the vote. Either I got an idol or a necklace or, you know, my alliance is behind me, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you have to make sure that you're not going to be actively targeted for a battle match, because as you saw in the previous episode, there is usually a 50-50 shot.
Yeah. Brent, is there any way to be safe from the battle match?
Yes, you can play in LOS if you are selected for the battle match. So it's similar to an idol. It can keep you safe for the vote or the battle match, but not both. So as we're going to see later in this episode, someone's going to be picked for the battle match, but they had already given up their LOS.
And would you have to play the LOS before you get called? If it's like, all right, Brent and Taryn, you're in the match. And then do you take it out after? Or
no, Taryn and I talked about this last year, actually. That was the same question we had. For the vote, it works just like Survivor. You have to play it beforehand. But for the battle match, you may play it after. So if you're selected for the battle match, you can then turn in your LOS. That's how it works.
Yeah, there was one player last season who just panicked and played it before she even got picked. And I was like, why did she do that if you didn't have to?
Yeah, Taryn actually texted me back though. Why did she do this? This is Krista from The Amazing Race. He's like, why did she play her LOS when she wasn't even selected? And I'm like, oh, she panicked, I guess. Or she knew she was going to get picked, whatever. And
seemingly really screwed over her allies because the person picking was like, wait, why are you playing this? Did you do something? Should I throw in the other allies that we had? I guess so.
Good times.
Anyway. So really the best way to stay safe would be to have an LOS. And then as long as you're not the vote, then you will just be completely safe from a battle match pick. So if you have, say, a green jersey and an LOS, then that would mean you are completely safe from this particular vote. I think playing the LOS for a vote is definitely not ideal because it's much, much more valuable in terms of the battle match pick. Not only does the battle match pick tend to be more random than the vote, but you don't have to play it if you don't need to play it. And so it's really, really valuable there. And so yeah. I definitely don't love anything that Jordan did here.
Yeah, that's a good point, Taryn. I didn't think about that. That if you know you're safe from the vote, then you know you're safe for the cycle because you can play the LOS after the fact when it comes to battle match selections. And those are the ones that seem to be fairly unpredictable. And it has been my biggest quibble with the overarching structure of the show is that I always get the vote and the strategy, whatever twist is in play, I get it. But the battle match selections, half the time they are so what the F that you don't understand narratively why people are being targeted. Like, for example, Exhibit A is Mary Payton. I'm like, why the hell was she? Because she does yoga, I guess. Okay, that's what we're going with here. So anyway, that's where we are.
Yeah, and also another reason why it's pretty important to make sure that nobody knows that you have an LOS because it's very easy to just burn it. If the person voted out wants to burn your LOS, all they have to do is name you. Yep. You have to play it and then they name two other people. Yep. There's no downside. There's no reason for them not to do that.
I will jump ahead really quickly. Obviously, we're going to learn that Zach, who we didn't even see in episode one, Rob, found...
Yes.
An LOS, and it looks to me like no one saw him find it, and he hasn't told anybody about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, did he find it off camera? Because he walked in, and he's like, by the way, I got an LOS.
Yeah, today. I obviously immediately sent a text to Audrey and was like, what happened with this? And she said that he found it when the camera wasn't on him, and obviously it didn't make it easier because he apparently has told no one about it. So, last season we saw some people, I think one or two people found them off camera, but then they talked, either someone saw them find it or they talked to someone instantly about it. And so they were able to, sort of wedge it into the story that way. But Zach found it on his own and thus far has told absolutely nobody about it, which he obviously should do, Taryn. I feel like that this is part of the thing.
Look, he should tell people or he should not?
No, should not tell people. He should obviously should keep it totally secret that he has an LOS. Otherwise, they'll select him for the battle match. So that's definitely the right thing to do. It was just a little unfortunate that they didn't catch him on camera. But this is not like Big Brother where they have, cameras 24/7 in the sky watching your every move. They literally, the contestants know that if they're going to have a conversation with somebody, that's important narratively to the story or something that they want people to see, that if it doesn't happen on camera, it probably didn't happen. So they really try to go out of their way to make sure that whatever they do or say is on camera, that there's a camera person with them. I think a little bit of bad luck here that he found it when he didn't have a camera on him. But on the other hand, he was so invisible in the first episode, I understand why there wasn't a camera following him there.
Yeah, they should plant hidden cameras where the LOSs are.
You have to find the hidden camera.
Exactly. Well, that's a clue to the fact that there's an LOS somewhere in there.
That
right?
Works like Survivor, Rob, where, if the camera guy isn't following you around, you're like, well, shit, I'm not in the right spot here, I guess.
Not if you're Zach.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a teddy bear in the room, you're like, wait a minute.
That's a good idea, Taryn. Yeah, well, hi.
So all obviously this LOS business has a lot to do with what we're going to see play out after the vote happens. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. So what we talked about in the previous episode, where Jordan had found an LOS in the hot tub with Matt there and Jessica being a witness, and then quickly turned into a he said, where Matt says that Jordan found it, and Jordan is saying that Matt found it. It appeared that Jordan started this by saying Matt had it, and then Matt was informed, and he was like, "What? No, it's Jordan that has it." We never really got the genesis for why this happened, why Jordan decided to go with this particular lie, but he apparently tried to pretend that he had a fake one, which was actually a mug lid. Right. And it seemed like that was working, as like everybody that was then told he had a real one was like, "No, it's a fake one." But then it lit up in his pocket, which I don't know how you're supposed to hide an LOS if it lights up in your pocket.
Yeah, that might be a problem. But he was not able to keep it secret, and obviously he's going to receive some of the votes here, Terrence. Some of the blowback in this episode is going to fall into Jordan because they believe that he has the LOS.
Yes. And very interesting play from Jessica, who saw that Jordan found the LOS, did tell people that he had it, but then also goes to Jordan and tells him, "Hey, I haven't told anybody. And here's the guy you need to be looking at, because he's the one going after you. It's Kevin. It's Dimples. And please, he's very loud. I don't want him to yell at me. Don't tell him that I'm the one that told you this." Jordan appears to completely buy this
hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. And it spends the rest of the episode just completely driven to drag Kevin down with him.
Taryn, this is the guy, first of all, I'll own it. Jordan is the guy who I said gave me the best interview of the guys. I felt like I had the most confidence in him, but I didn't want him to play crazy.
He said
his favorite player was Judd. And he also said that he rants on YouTube and Instagram, Rob. Jordan does. He likes to rant and go on to Instagram and rant about things.
Oh, so what does he rant about?
I just life in general. But after watching this episode, I imagine he's probably ranting about Kevin right now.
Let him watch his rants.
Yeah, I know. That's I was like, because he seems like such a nice guy, but Terry, he just absolutely lost his freaking mind this episode. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
did he ever have one? I don't know.
I don't know either. Tracy in the chat is coming for me saying, am I going to skip over Braden calling the Guys Alliance the big dick swinging alliance that he was not a part of? No, Tracy, I'm not going to skip over that. Obviously, the other part of this episode and the reason why Matt was eventually voted out in part was because he was a part of the Guys Alliance, Taryn, and they were coming for it. They were coming for it with blood.
Yes, and Thomas immediately, as soon as he has the opportunity, is going to spill his guts. We already talked about his conversation with Tori, but really he just does it to a big group of people. It's them.
What
it's
happened me. Here? I was in it. You know, I tweeted this out, Rob. This was like McCray on Big Brother 15 squealing about the moving company. Like, he's a part, he's a beta guy. He's with a bunch of alphas. They brought him into the alliance. He starts to panic when questioned about it, and he just totally squeals his guts and just tells everybody about it. And then Nick goes home in the second episode, and likewise here, Matt goes home in the second episode. So I felt like that it's a good analogy on my part.
I like that you ended it with complimenting yourself.
Thank you.
Yes. I mean, it seemed like he kept him safe. I wasn't really sure his motivations about it, but it seemed like that really only, you know, it turned out that there were people talking about him, but he seemed safe.
I think what the part of the issue and why it came up was that Kimberly on her way out talked about the Guys Alliance and said, "I know there's a Guys Alliance. I know who's a part of it." And so that got people talking about the new shiny thing in the room. And then, you know, as some of the eyes were falling on Thomas, or maybe he was questioned about it. I think they brought it up while he was standing there. He panicked, told them everything that they wanted to know, everything that he's been doing with those guys. And I guess wanted to make himself seem like a lost puppy and wanted them to bring him in. So we'll see whether or not it works or not.
Yeah, I don't hate it. in the sense that this is not a real alliance. They've been working together for one vote and it did not exactly work. Then they got exposed and he's very clearly working with them. He basically, before he said anything, people are like, well, you were a part of it, right? And so I don't hate it, but at the same time, it's definitely very dangerous to be the first person to so blatantly throw this out there, because it is immediately going to get back to Matt and Drew, as it did. And since they are the ones that it's going to fall on, I think he puts himself in immense danger to be chosen for the battle match if one of Matt or Drew eventually gets voted out, which they did. I think if not for the Jordan situation, he might have been in some trouble here, Rob.
I also think that the idea of a guy's, and I have no idea the history of Sequester, but I can't imagine that anything like a Pretty Boys or a Brigade, a Taran, is going to be successful on Sequester with 20 people filled with super fans. I can't imagine that this is going to be a successful alliance anyway. So I don't mind the move to jump ship.
Yeah, I just think he needed to do it more quietly.
Yeah.
Coming to a couple of individuals and you know, spilling his guts, I think that builds trust with that individual person rather than telling a group a bit more, and then it hopefully doesn't get back to Matt and Drew in the same way.
Yeah, because one of the people he was talking to was Jordan. Yes. Jordan was in that group, and then Jordan immediately went back to Kevin and Drew and Matt and said, hey, Thomas is down there spilling his guts and telling everybody that you guys are working together. So I agree with you that his better bet here would have been to go to one or two people. On the other hand, I feel like he was just in a big group of people. He got asked a question and he panicked. So, you know, note to Guys Alliance in the future, you're a bunch of alphas. Don't let a beta come in between you. They'll throw you under the bus and squeal like a pig the minute they get a chance. I said it.
Oh boy!
How do you vet that, Brent?
I don't know. You can tell. I feel like you can look at somebody like Matt. You shake his hand. You're like, okay, he's an alpha. You look at somebody like Drew. You shake his hand. He's an alpha. You shake Thomas's hand. You're like, eh. Yeah.
Yeah. When did Brent turn into Cody Nixon?
When he watched Cody Nixon. He's been talking about alphas and betas ever since.
That's very true, Darren. I feel like a lot of that has been defined me in terms of my reality TV watching experience. But I still stand by what I said, that if he had any spine whatsoever, I feel like he doesn't blow his top like the minute he gets asked one question in a group of people. And it did seem like he was putting himself in immense danger by doing so. The fact that he was safe here, like, it's not through anything he did. It's just by the tragic actions of a few other people.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was interesting to me is that we really got we heard a lot from, you know, two people we haven't really talked much about at all yet. Jayla and Brayden, I think, are the two people we heard from more than anyone in this episode, and yet we haven't talked about them because they seemingly didn't have much to do with what was happening, which made me curious as to why we were hearing so much from them. I think they give good confessionals, and that's probably a big reason, but definitely something that stood out to me is the fact that we were hearing from them so often. Brayden really stood out to me in particular in this episode, as he was commenting on nearly everything despite not seemingly having much of a role in much of it, Rob.
Yeah, Brayden, I definitely get the sense that he feels like he's the smartest person there, definitely smarter than everybody else. He said his strategy was he wanted to be the person in the middle of all of the monkeys throwing poop, but he didn't want to get any poop on him.
Rob, are you aware that Brayden is Canada's smartest person? Are you aware of this?
That's so funny. Oh, I forgot. I absorbed that information in the first episode, but I have not connected the dots between the two shows. I am certainly not America's smartest person.
Okay. Well, I feel like that that's interesting. I don't know if it's in your subconscious somewhere, or you just were getting that from Brayden, that he sort of comes off as the smartest guy in the room. But I do feel like he at least gives good confessionals, and he's a good narrator for the show, and is able to explain generally what's happening and what he's trying to do. So I did appreciate here, Taran, that he was trying to stay back as much as possible. He seemed like, not to come for him, but he did seem like he was a little above it all. Like, he's like, I might actually have to put in some work in this episode. And I'm like, oh, really? Like, I guess you're sitting pretty.
I love it when people get cocky personally.
All right. That's like, true.
Either it works and it's great, or it doesn't and it's great. So it's no skin off my back. We also heard a lot from Jayla, who also didn't seem to have much to do. She was very upset with Mary Payton's departure. It seems like she's that kind of left with without many allies, I guess, as Mary Payton leaves.
I don't know if that's true or not. I'm still waiting to sort of shake out the game board here and see. It does seem like she has a fair amount of social currency, Jayla, I'm talking about. She obviously gets her fair share of confessionals and is leading the pack by a mile in terms of getting television time here. But and let me just say, is absolutely amazing. Her comment when she found the LOS and said, I took a DNA test and I'm 100% that girl or that bitch. And, you know, try and come for me now because I'm safe. I was living for that. I am curious, though, how much weight she carries within the people that she's working with, though, because it seems like, as we talked about, she gets a fair share of TV time. But I want to see who's driving the bus here. And I don't know that it's Jayla. In fact, she did not vote for Matt, actually. She actually voted for Jay West, as we saw in the episode.
Do you have the where the votes actually went?
Yes, I do. So the people that, I brought it up here on my phone. The people that voted for Matt were a majority. It was Braden, Cameron, and Kristen, Christine, Dina, and Dustin, Hunter, Kevin, Thomas, Tori, and Jordan. So those people voted for Matt. I think about six other people voted for Jordan West or Jay West. He goes by both names. And then Matt was off on his own voting for Thomas. So I don't know what the hell happened there.
Again, Thomas very well could have been chosen for that battle match. But then I guess gets lucky with this whole Jordan Kevin feud. I wonder if part of Matt was thinking maybe it wasn't Thomas that screwed us over. Maybe it really was Kevin. Who knows?
Yeah, that was part of what we saw when the contestants were talking with each other, because definitely some of the blame was getting laid at Thomas's feet. But I do want to credit Ty, who I didn't have a ton of confidence in after my interview with him, doing some good work here and trying to save Thomas here, because he has a pretty good bond with him and is trying really more to push the vote somewhere else and make sure that Matt is ultimately the person that was voted out. So, like, I feel like the Ty, Jessica, certainly for starting the fight between Jordan and Kevin, and Tori probably did the best work in this episode.
Yeah, there were definitely a few people pushing Matt in particular. It did seem like the one time Braden was involved in some actual strategy talk, it seemed like he was really trying to push Thomas, but it just wasn't going anywhere.
I agree with that as well.
Oh, but, you know, I mean, we should still consider. They were like, well, we'll just go Matt. We already promised. And they're like, yeah, well, we can still consider. And they're like, well, we kind of went Matt. And he was like, oh, well, let's say one for Thomas, two for Matt. Let's say that. And they're like, all right, Matt. Oh, okay, Matt.
I'm glad you got that too. I saw that as well. I feel like that indicates to me that Braden views Thomas as a far greater threat than Matt is, and feels like that, you know, Matt left to his own devices with Thomas out of the game. You're always going to see Matt. He's a big, burly guy. He's a big presence in the house. I feel like with Matt out of the game, that Thomas could sort of blend back in with people. And I do feel like that Braden probably recognized that. That's interesting that you caught that as well.
Another thing that happens here is that Matt is going to make a promise to, I believe it was Cameron, Kevin, and Drew, was it? That he would not choose them for the battle match if he was voted out. I will never understand why these deals even get made, because it's basically saying, like, promise you won't screw us over if you get voted out, which kind of implies that they're expecting that he's going to be voted out. And it gives them a lot of incentive to allow him at the very least, actually vote him out. So I don't understand why this took place.
Well, in fairness, he did put Kevin into the
exactly.
Well, yeah, but that's what we're saying, Rob. Like, this is terrible to strong arm somebody. So basically, once you've lost the game, can I have your understanding here, your promise that you will not try to screw me over on your way out the door? That's basically what they're asking him here. And I was glad to see, number one, that he went back on it. Number two, that some of the people in the room who tried to make him promise that had to pay for it in the end. Because I feel like if I see you on season four and you're doing this shit, this is terrible. Like, you don't want to strong arm people if they get voted off, because they're going to blame you in the end, and they're still going to be feel like they got bit in the butt by you.
Yeah. In order for me to support you staying, I want to make sure that if you leave, it benefits me.
Yes. Thank you.
I love how Cameron was just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Not, can I ask, what'd you say, Rob?
Was Matt a good choice to go after here? I mean, what threat was Matt?
I think he was a terrible choice, but I feel like that it's a compressed amount of time. You know, we know that there are two or three cycles a day. So I think, by the time you could see that it was dark when they introduced the twist. So it was after 6 o'clock. So they don't have that long. They don't have an hour to strategize, basically. And, it's hard to, especially with this many people in the game, to try to move the votes towards somebody. I feel like that they wanted to target the guys' alliance. Tori was out for blood for the people that voted for her in episode one. Matt was one of those people. Matt basically owned it in that conversation to Tori. And she was aware that he was one of the people. She couldn't vote for Drew because he had the green jersey. And so I feel like it naturally fell on Matt. That's how I feel things happen.
Yeah, it seemed to me like it was a combination of, Tori was told it's Matt that has an issue with you in particular. She had a conversation with him that did not, get rid of those doubts. And then so Tori obviously had a lot of incentive for Matt. And then Thomas seemed to have a few connections. It kind of became Matt or Thomas. There was a lot of talk about Jordan, but I have to wonder that, I imagine that there was some concern about voting Jordan. If he actually does have an LOS, he plays it, then who goes home? And so right. I think Matt was definitely the easiest person to throw votes on there. That's what
I feel like I feel like they're most worried about a bounce back here, like with an idol play. Like, they all vote for Jordan. And then, at that point, it's almost like episode one, Taryn, where, all of the majority of the votes are null and void. And it's the plurality or even a minority of people that are controlling who goes home here. And you just don't want that, as Braden would say, the poop to fall on you and, get screwed out of a game here. So I feel like that's what they were mostly going for.
Yes. So what we see happen is that Matt is, before Matt gets voted out, Jordan is going to play his LOS. And this is just the beginning of the end here. If Jordan doesn't get eliminated in this battle match, then it really ruins a great downfall, because this is all wrong. Everything he did here was wrong. But between playing the LOS when he didn't need to, and then as he goes to play the LOS, he makes a big speech about Kevin and how he is a backstabber.
Taryn, I actually transcribed this. And I feel like it would be interesting if I performed as Jay West here.
Should I be Dimples?
Well, that would be fair. He walks up there, says, basically, I got shit to say. And he says, I apologize for never telling you all about my power, but I'm mainly targeting Kevin, rat bitch ass. You never got told nothing about my LOS. Seeing it lighting up in my pocket like a rat. Like, I don't care that Matt told everybody about my LOS because he actually seen me searching for it. But you waited till you got safety, but you're not safe. That's what I'm saying. Whoever come up here, because it's not going to be me, because he's playing his LOS, for this battle back shit, you all can pick me and him for this battle match, or him. He got to come out because he knows everybody's secret. And yeah, that's about it. Did that make a lick of sense to you? Did anybody understand this?
Makes a lot of sense, friend. He's diffusing the whole situation, and then he's going to go take Kevin into the battle, and he's going to smoke him.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, before we continue, Taryn, I must say that I love it on Survivor when the Survivor's very meta, but this show is like as old as a newborn baby. It is like, born yesterday, and they're already doing callbacks to season two where they're talking about that's a bitch move. That's a bitch move, dude. And I think I heard Good Talker in there, Taryn. And
are those specific callbacks, or are they just saying those?
Oh no, I have to believe they're doing it on purpose. Like, I mean, when Kevin gets called out by Jordan, he's like, "That's a bitch move, dude." That's
a pretty common saying.
Like I feel
especially
like
for jocks that love condoms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I know there was another callback though. I'll think of it anyway. So he continues, and Kevin tells him that he saw the. Thank you. I appreciate it. He saw the light up. Kevin says, "Look, I saw a light up in your pocket." So I don't understand what the problem is. Jordan says, "Yeah, you saw it lighting up, but you never said anything till you had that green jersey on your chest." I don't understand why you like Taryn. Can you explain to me the animosity from Jordan here? I don't understand his animosity to Kevin. I don't get it, because I know that Jessica started this fight by blaming Kevin for being the one to spread around that Jordan has the LOS, but he knew that, like, Jordan knows that Matt's openly telling people that Jordan is the one with the LOS, and he doesn't seem peeved with him, and all Kevin did was see it light up in his pocket, so why is he mad at him? Is there any sense to this, or are they just, like, crazy at 3 a.m. in the morning here?
I think obviously to some extent has to do with ego a bit here, is that, Jordan had a master plan to make sure that nobody knew that he had the LOS, that he was going to blame Matt, and he was getting away with it. He had a fake LOS, and it was actually Matt that had the LOS, and he would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for the sneaky betrayal of those meddling dimples. And he waited until he was immune so that there would be no blowback on him, because I surely could have turned this vote around on him if he wasn't immune. So how dare he wait until he's immune to backstab me and destroy my immaculate plan? I think this is, I don't know, maybe that's where it came from.
That sounds good to me. I'm going with that. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I buy that. I think that's good. Look, you're going to go on sequester. Bring it. Don't go out quiet. Make an impression.
That's fair. I appreciate him making an impression, but I don't feel like I can reward him for basically pulling himself into a battle match here. As we talked about, Matt voted for Thomas. He was put out with Thomas. He said it in confessional. Matt had every reason to pull Thomas into a battle match here. And I really believe he would have if Jordan hadn't basically forced Matt's hand and said, "Pull me into the battle match." And then he gave us what we wanted. Don't you feel like?
Yeah, and I think I think it does make sense for Matt to just, okay, if that's what you want, then I'm not pissing anybody off. Ruining any relationships for a potential battle match to get back into the game.
I feel that's a good point. Yeah, I was gonna question why Matt did this, but then again, he gets him no blood on his hands whatsoever. Like, he's not going to be in the place that Kimberly was at the beginning of the episode, where she's, trying to defend calling Mary Payton into the battle match when she called out a guy's alliance. I'm never going to let that go, by the way. He gets no blowback here whatsoever. And I feel like that most of the people who are eliminated, you remember there's five people who are going to be eliminated, surely not because they got voted out, but because they lost a battle match here in the pre-jury. And somebody's going to have a chance to come back, but most of the people are not going to have a chance to come back. So I feel like that if you're angsty about something or resentful about something, it's probably going to be, I really feel like the battle match, like a vote you can take, like, "Hey, I played bad, they voted me out," but a battle match, like, "I was safe and then you stabbed me in the back at the last minute." I feel like that's probably the harder one to take here, Rob.
Yeah. You lose a battle match, and I did this, but then everybody votes for you. It's more of a betrayal. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I feel like it can be more of a betrayal, Taryn.
Yeah, I think the only blowback that will come, of course, is the fact that he promised Kevin that he would not do this. So Kevin is very upset about that. I wonder if Matt even remembered that. Kevin versus Jordan. And so Jordan plays the LOS when he doesn't need to. He did not have the majority of the votes on him. Then requests that he be put in the battle match with Kevin, who is not even the main person that betrayed him. It was false you cannot have a worse look here than to pull the Polly move on the challenge, who is always like, "Oh, I'm gonna go in and face off with the person."
That's a good Polly impression. I like that.
Well, I'd also have to get into their face and give them a little bit of a kiss. He didn't do that, but he did actually do the thing that Polly is actually smart enough not to ever actually do,
which is never put my LOS on the line.
Right.
for no good reason.
Yes. So he actually goes in and he actually volunteers for this, and it is going to happen. And so he is going to face off against Kevin in this battle match. It'll definitely be interesting to see what happens.
Maybe Jay West is using Sequester as a springboard to get on the challenge.
Maybe so.
That's possible. I don't know. I agree with you, though, Taryn. I, for somebody who I had a lot of faith in the preseason after his interview with me, he was like, Jordan is such a great guy, such a great smile. I felt so warm talking to him. I had all the faith in the world in him. And then he plays like this, like, honey, we got to have words like this. This was terrible. It was good television, but it was terrible gameplay.
Like I said, people that rant on the internet, I'm not going to have a lot of faith in them in a game like this.
Thank you, Taryn. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anybody else that you wanted to highlight here, Taryn? Rob, anybody that stick out to you as any of your favorites in this episode or something? So let's talk about the stuff you did like.
Yeah, he didn't get a lot of airtime, but I do like Dustin. That I thought he was. He seems just like a really fun personality. I'm always paying attention when he's on the screen, even though he didn't have a ton to do in this episode. And I'm looking at the board. I really don't think that Drew in the show looks like his picture. His picture looks like Johnny Depp in like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And that's not what he's looked like on the show.
Yeah, he has so many looks, that Drew. He's very, very, I don't want to say
chameleon.
He's mysterious. Yeah, like I can't pin him down, Drew. Because when I saw his picture, I'm like, that is, like, he walked into my interview in like jeans and a shirt with a like hat on backwards. And then in his picture, he has like a suit on with glasses, looking like Lex Luthor. So I'm a bit sad that his partner Thanos got voted out here. I really wanted to have more fun with them.
Yeah.
He tried to save him too. Like Drew tried to save Matt here in terms of getting the votes on Jay West, but they could not come up with the majority.
Yes. Again, not much from Kristen in this episode. I think I heard from her like once in the entire thing. We definitely got a short but sweet amount of content from Jessica, as she is the one to basically cause this whole battle match situation. I can't even say. I mean, it was certainly effective in getting the job done, but I still don't understand why she wanted the job done. Like who she's working with and why this benefits her.
I agree with that.
You know, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, I'll give her all the credit in the world for this. I just don't understand why the move needed to be made. I mean, I guess it keeps her safe from a battle match selection. She knows that they're going to go after each other. That's probably the biggest extent of it I can give her, but I do appreciate the fact that she pulled it off.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then we saw just a little bit from Cameron, as I mentioned earlier. And that's really
we really saw nothing from Erica and Hunter this episode besides the condom comment. Like I they were a big presence in the first episode as
the undesirables,
Rob. Yes, this was a. I feel like that they could do some work together. Like it was like my favorite show, Once Upon a Time, Rumpelstiltskin says that, you know, two people who are working together can do a lot of great things, but two people who share a common enemy can do even more. So I feel like that if Hunter and Erica
Rumpelstiltskin.
Thank you. I try. If they can work together here and people don't know that they're working together. I mean, I made fun of them in the first episode for the fact that, you know, they're sleeping in the same bed. It looks like obvious that they're working together. But I don't know that the cast necessarily is at least as smart as I am, which isn't saying a lot.
Well, they've only slept in that bed once.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But to us, it feels like they've been together a week and a half, but they've only been there one night. So.
Yeah, we basically just got a reminder that was their game plan, though it didn't really have much to do with this particular episode. So I imagine that's going to come into play in the future. And then, of course, we also got an update on Dina, as she is now
she's
in
looking
that,
better.
She is in that situation. This is position, right, where in the first day she was very sick and she did not socialize. And so now she's like having to play the role, like be like, I think, even more aggressive than maybe even she normally would. Like, no, I'm social. I get along with people. I'm loud. I promise.
I can only remember your comment from the first episode, or maybe it was when we did the preseason interviews, where you were like, if people tell me their weaknesses, that means that they're really, really bad. Like, they've addressed it and they are not, like, they were not able to overcome it, and it's really bad. But when people tell you their strengths, it's obviously not good either, because when she's like, no, I'm social, I really am, I'm very social, you just you know, I was a little sick in the first episode, so not good, Dina. But she is looking better here, and I know that Twitter seems to love Dina. So I'm hopeful for her stands, at least, that she's able to write the ship.
The pity party is over.
Yeah. Yeah. The pity party is over. Yes. Good. She's not feeling sorry for herself anymore. And she apparently is not in any pain anymore. So she seems good.
Good.
And maybe she got some of that OG Kush that Jayla was talking about with the greens. Yeah. Mm. Let's get all the greens to come upstairs. Like, I take your point, Taryn, that Sequester really does reward this kind of bold, aggressive play more than other shows do, because I don't know of another show where you'd basically like get a group of people together and box the other people out and be able to get away with it. But they were, her and Thomas both were trying to get the greens upstairs to talk.
But they were all safe. And,
I know, but they could still be selected for the battle match here. And again, without Jordan's crazy gameplay, I feel like that one of them might have been.
Mm-hmm. So that's about what we have. You know, certainly we apologize for the hot dog. I hope that you didn't mind that it was in our pockets. You know, it's, I mean, look, is the hot dog in a pocket's not hurting anyone?
Why did Matt walk around with a hot dog? It doesn't make any sense. Like,
well, he was probably eating it.
Where, Brent, please, the next time you text Audrey.
Yes.
Where are the hot dog buns? It seemed like that there was just a tray of hot dogs. I didn't see any condiments, and it seemed like there were no buns. Is that like
you have to have like, buns? You have to have buns with a wiener. Audrey's in the chat. I'm sure she can tell me. Braden's in the chat, for heaven's sake.
And at what point, like, did Matt? He's having like these game conversations with people like Tori, and he's just holding. hot dog in his hand, like, toss the wiener.
Toss the wiener. He did not toss the wiener.
You're making things awkward. You're trying to, fighting for your life here. Just throw the hot dog away. And then he put it in his pocket. I don't know if it was like a prop that, like, hey guys, isn't this funny? I got a hot dog in my pocket.
And then he was eating a hot dog.
His food. That's his dinner.
He was eating a hot dog
just
later.
Can you just give me a second to...
hey, they have a very limited amount of time to strategize. He's trying to eat and go.
Take 10 seconds and eat. It's a choking hazard. Got to be careful with a hot dog. But take 15 seconds. How long does it take to eat a hot dog without a bun?
Hey, Rob, he's got to eat a lot of hot dogs. You know, there's no carbs there because it's all hot dog, and he's got to fuel those guns.
Oh, maybe is that it, Brent? Is Matt no carbs? Is that why he has to eat the hot dog?
That's what Audrey's in the chat right now. She said that it was keto, a diet season, and that's what he was doing. He was, so she says also he was trying to show that he didn't have an LOS. It was just a wiener. So I guess
she said it was the only thing in his pants.
Real Gallagher.
Yeah, this is like shades of Rupert on All-Stars here, trying to like fool them with the thing in his pocket, but it works in reverse on Sequester.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're looking to see if it lights up in your pocket, Rupert.
Taryn, what are the chances that we can get Brent on Sequester one day? Now, have you seen too much, Brent? Is that out of the question now?
I don't feel like it's out of the question, but I feel like, and this is just, you know, I know you can tell me what you want, but I feel like I'm better out here as a cheerleader for the show.
No,
like,
you're better in there.
I agree with Rob.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I would fall flat on my face, Taryn.
I know.
I feel like
that's it's why it's going to be really fun. Well,
think of all the people that would tune in to see.
Yeah. I suppose I don't know. You know, I have such a busy schedule. I don't know.
Brent, you know, talks a big game.
Yeah.
Yeah. People would be, the viewership would be through the roof. Everybody wants to see is Brent going to be able to back up the talk?
She cast 19 other fame whores too. And so, like, I feel like they would then be like, well, we got to pick Brent for the battle match. Because remember Hamza and Jesse from Big Brother Canada, Rob, you didn't even watch season 2. They were on Sequester season 2 and episode 1, who do they pick for the battle match? Hamza and Jesse.
So, okay. Right.
That doesn't fill me with confidence.
Undercover Brent. Brenton in disguise.
Yeah, I could go in drag. Not my work. Like the guy from Big Brother Canada, the Scott guy who didn't get voted in. Vengeance for Scott, Rob.
Yeah, what do you mean? Maybe Brent, I mean, would never shave his head, but I'm sure there's something we can come up with.
Shave my head.
Okay.
I would shave my head. I'm not a Jared.
Yes. Brent, happy Veterans Day.
No, thank you, Rob. I appreciate that. Yeah, so a lot of people find it incredible that I was actually in the military and actually served, but like the Army did me a lot of good, so I always try to tell people as much about it as I can.
All right. Well, I believe that's all we have for you.
Can we talk about Survivor for a couple of minutes?
Yes,
is that okay?
Survivor spoilers. Yeah,
Survivor spoilers. Okay.
Yes.
Because I really want that. Taryn, I was thinking about this today where I really wanted to get Brent's take on the big Survivor move this week, because I feel like that Brent is Mr. Big Move.
Yes.
And we had a very big move on Survivor this week. Give people another couple of seconds if they don't want any Survivor spoilers.
Yes.
But I really want to hear Brent's take on Kelly's move from Survivor this week.
So, as you know, maybe you don't know if you're paying attention to the other patrons, but I took a little hiatus from Survivor.
Oh.
Because I was so put out with the results of last season and, you know, a winner was voted off in day 11 and played like 12 days getting to win the game. So, I am starting to catch up, but I'm only through 3 episodes. So, okay. I don't know what happened. I know basically who got voted out, but what happened, Rob? Like, what was so amazing?
It would be too hard to explain.
I saw Probst all over Twitter, and he was like, this is the most amazing thing that's happened in Survivor Tribal Council, and something we've never had happen in 39 seasons or something.
I think it was more the conversation that came out of the Tribal Council. I mean, it's actually very appropriate that we're talking about it in Sequester and Men's Alliance, that there was a lot of talk about a Women's Alliance and whether it's sexist to talk about, to assume women are going to be in a Women's Alliance. So I think that was more what the historical implications were of the Tribal Council more. But at the same Tribal Council, there was also a very big move in the game.
Yes. It just figures that I've heard nothing but good things about this season of Survivor. And it just figures that the one season, you know, I've watched all 38 seasons of Survivor. The one season I said, you know what, I'm going to take a little break.
Solid pre-merge. Very solid pre-merge. let's not get carried away. Greatest season of all time.
Okay.
Nobody's tweeting best season ever, but very solid.
Very solid preseason.
All right. Yeah, Taryn, did you have a thought on the move?
I mean, it was definitely an interesting move. When it was being described, I was like, ugh, this sounds way too cute. But then, you know, it went off seemingly without a hitch. But I personally just feel like basically the requirement here is that it stays a secret. It's the secrecy of the move. But based on the plan that was laid out in front of me, I didn't get to see all of it because of the editing. It seems very blatant to me that this will get out, like, surely. How is Nora not going to explain that, why she voted the way she did? Why is she going to just accept that that Dean happened to vote the exact same way that she did? It seems like a lot of stuff that will just immediately come out in the next episode, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe it was conceived in a way that it won't. It's hard for me to know that until I see that happen and until we know exactly how it was performed.
I feel like that Rob, this feels almost like what Probst has talked about before, where he wants people to play Survivor like they're playing for their second time.
Yes.
Like you're playing the first time, like for your second time. So you're playing big ballsy gameplay. It may not necessarily be like, you know, like the optimum strategy, but almost like what we've at least I've talked about in Sequester, where it's a ballsier game. And so maybe you'll play dividends in the long run for them if they'll get asked back or, you know. I don't know. It does seem like Survivor is
hard.
People play harder. I feel like that Survivor nowadays rewards ballsier gameplay than old Survivor of the past.
Yes. Well, I think that a lot of this is sort of out of the many discussions we've had about the Laurel and not pulling the trigger on a move in Ghost Island. I do think that I think that she has been really, you know, dragged as, you know, the person, the worst thing you could be on Survivor, somebody who doesn't make a move. So everybody's firing on all cylinders. But as a result, we're losing a lot of strong players, and we are seeing, you know, the people like, well, you know, gotta take out a threat every single time.
Right. I wanted to ask you quickly about Robin Sandra, because my mom loves them, and she was mad the one episode where I think they didn't have Robin Sandra. And she was like, what happened to them?
She's
I wanted
mad.
To see more of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they've been great.
Yeah.
I've only seen three episodes, but they've been great.
Then one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about was that when Julie Chen was posting about the costumes, where were you on what was going on? Brent, did you think that it was going to be Big Brother All-Stars was coming?
Well, I was hoping. I thought that would, you know, it would be great for me if it started in, like, you know, I don't know, February or something, because sequesters are going to end by then, and then we could pick right up with All-Stars and then Big Brother Canada and give me something to do, Rob. You know, I like to hear myself talk. Right?
So, yeah.
But no, I didn't see anything on the schedule CBS released for their winter months.
Yeah.
So unless they're fooling us here.
Not like, even well, the Amazing Race.
Rob, what was happening here? Like, what is she doing?
Here's what's happening. Or Taryn,
go ahead. Explain what's happening.
Here's what's happening. Julie Chen Moonves used to have 10 jobs. Now she has one. She has nothing to talk about between September 30th and June 25th. Nothing.
Fair point. You're right.
Her timeline is only Big Brother. So she's like, well, I got to do content. Got to plan out the year. Halloween, I got it. I'll go in the diary room for 10 minutes and I'll put on 5 different costumes and I'll tweet one out every single day of the week. That was it. It was Halloween.
I guess.
I think she might do adopt the Big Jeff gag. And then in Christmas, she'll do an advent calendar of a dollar store gift for every Big Brother house guest all in December. She has no other content except Big Brother.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair point.
I feel like I say this every year, but Big Brother production, Damon Lindelof is not in charge of Big Brother. This is not Lost. They're not going to, like, you know, sneak in teasers and like you know, subtle or not subtle ways of, like, being like, ooh, maybe we're doing this. That's not Big Brother production. We get announcements via press releases.
Big Brother production, like, is David photoshopped into a picture hours after he's voted out.
Yes. They are not thinking, oh, how can we tease our hardcore fan base? They have no interest in that. That is not how we're going to find out about any potential All-Star season.
That's a fair point. Rob, before I let you go, I know you've only seen 2 episodes of Sequester, but I must get a winner pick or 2 from you about who do you have confidence in that could actually go the distance here?
Well, I just want to thank you, Brent, for you know, having me on the podcast. It was very fun to get to catch up with both of you. I listened to the first podcast, and you know, I was laughing in the way that Brent described, you know, his pitch to me about doing the podcast and how he was embarrassed that the players weren't playing hard enough after. He sold the show to me, and then he was upset with them because they weren't playing hard enough for me. He was embarrassed at what I was going to think. So I appreciate that. It really touched me, Brent.
You're welcome. I was like, do it for Rob. Like, no, screw doing it for MP. Do it for Rob.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, but I need hand holding early on. So Jay West was playing at the right speed for me.
right.
I'm like, I'm the Brent's mom of Sequester right now. I really have liked Tori. I know that she suffers from the inauthentic thing, but I thought that she was really good.
I love it. An authentic person who's trying to be authentic who comes off as inauthentic. That's what Tori is.
Right. The problem is I don't even know what you have to do to win. So it's very hard for me to pick a winner. How does somebody win the game, Taryn?
I feel like that it is so funny because this is the game show that had a floater night twist that specifically targeted the floaters. But I do feel like in some ways you really have to be the ultimate floater to win, Taryn. But we've talked about how it rewards, you know, ballsy gameplay, but I do feel like that until I see someone actually do it, I don't know that it can be done. Like, I know it can be done, but I basically, it's like, show me, don't tell me.
Yeah, well, it rewards the bold on an individual basis. Like, if you can be bold in a successful way, in a smart way, then you can for the most part keep yourself relatively safe. But as with any of these games, it also, of course, rewards the lucky. And if you are, if you also happen to be safe from the bold players playing boldly, then that is going to work out very well for you. If you happen to not be the one that the axe falls on, that's going to work out for you. So I think that last season we saw like a little bit of both of that, like a really bold player and a more passive player get to the end, and it was a very close jury vote. So I think that it can go either way here.
What are you laughing at, Rob? I saw you laughing.
Daniel in the chat says, Kim, Brent just called you a floater. That's some shade.
Kim Matina from season two. I do feel like the Kim was a floater. I mean, she was an outsider. She was an underdog, you know. Yeah. And I think everybody, in fact, now that I think about it, everybody in season two who was in the jury, they all had to play a battle match. Like CJ played a battle match, Jake played a battle match, Cameron played a battle match. So like there's no avoiding the battle match. I feel like I'd like to see someone get to the end and win who didn't play a battle match. That would be interesting here.
And some of my other favorites, Jayla is great.
She's great. She's fantastic casting.
And Dustin, he makes me laugh when he's on the screen.
He makes me laugh when I didn't see a ton of him in this episode. We saw more of him in the first episode when he was trying to get all the votes on him. But I enjoy him as well. Brayden's obviously one of my favorites. I love Matt, but I knew he wasn't long for this world. And still waiting to see more personality from a few other people.
Yeah. And I will be gutted if Jay West loses to Kevin in the death match.
I think Taryn's with me on this. I'm actually rooting for Kevin here.
Why?
Because I feel like that Jordan needs to pay for his bad gameplay. Like his gameplay was so terrible and so tragic and just so bad. Like not just sort of bad, really bad. You have an LOS. You're literally safe through the cycle. You're not getting the majority of the votes. And somehow you still find a way to get yourself eliminated, Taryn. Are you not with me?
I'm with you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also, if Kevin leaves, then like his big grudge is already gone. And now where are we going with Jordan?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Have a feud with anybody else. His rivalry with Kevin was so well developed and earned over the first two episodes.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that somebody told him Kevin did something.
Jessica told him. Yes, it was all Jess's fault. Jessica, I see you. I told Jessica that Taryn and I would be evaluating her gameplay. But we saw that.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Taryn, I want to also say, somebody send me Jay West rants on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yes. Jordan, you heard him.
It's gonna rant about us next.
I don't think they were ready for me in the first episode to come for them, because I got a lot of pushback from some of the contestants who were I told them in the end, like, Taryn, you watch the interviews with me, for heaven's sake. I asked most of them. I said, look, I'm gonna call them like I see them, and if I come for you, you own your shit. And they were like, yeah, Brent, well, that's good. And then
everybody says that it's going to be fine. But yeah, that's going to be interesting to follow, because I know you don't pull any punches ever.
I really don't.
Me or Taryn, anybody could be next.
They need to, I think, learn from this very podcast where when Brent says, look, I go after people. When he is admitting that fault, that means that's extreme.
I don't feel like that's a weakness. I feel like that's a strength. You know where you're coming from me. If I'm not going to like do it behind your back. I'll tell you to your face. Hey, you played like shit. Mm-hmm. Watch it.
There you go. All right. Well, make sure you find us on social media. I'm on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn. Rob is at Rob Sestrin. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. You can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong, and Instagram at Taryn_Armstrong. Rob, you've got a lot of podcasts going on. Where can people?
Yeah, what are you doing, Rob?
Sure. A lot of stuff going on with Survivor right now, where we talked about this very exciting episode of the final pre-merge episode of the decade, Brent. We recapped it. had Chaos Cast, Sierra Easton on the
love
podcast.
Her.
Just yes. recorded with Josh Wiggler earlier tonight. I got the Wiggle Room going up, and then plenty other stuff going on. We had a very well received episode of Rob Nakiva Need a Podcast 2019 Hot Takeoff right up your alley, Brent.
Yes, I'm enjoying the Rob and Akiva Nita podcast. I do not listen. I'll, you know, full disclosure, I don't listen to all of them, but the ones that have an interesting title. I mean, it's great popcorn podcasting where you can just chill and drive and just, you know, you don't need to know what happened on the previous episode. You can just jump right in.
Bounce in and out.
Yeah, totally.
It sounds to me like you're saying it lacks depth.
Well,
popcorn.
Yeah. I think
it's a full meal.
Yeah.
Full meal.
Yeah.
Hearty.
Yeah.
Balanced.
Well, we will be back here obviously next Monday for the Sequester recap. Next show, episode 3, drops on YouTube at 8 p.m. Eastern next Sunday night. And Taryn, I will see you in a week.
Yes, there you go. Thank you so much for joining us. See you next time.
If you don't listen